Well, grace, mercy, and peace be with all of you here this day from our triune God. So, it seems as though we are once again in the season of political campaigning mode. And so, of course, this also means that everyone is now interested in what we think, right? But if you have already cut ties with your landline telephone and now maybe only have a cell phone available to you, perhaps you have been given a bit of a reprieve this time from certain pollsters and robocallers leaving messages for you. Nevertheless, it seems as though certain folks still want to get our opinion about which political candidate we like the most, or maybe which one we loathe the least. And yet in a world where people seem to always be in a hurry now, and attention spans, it would seem, are getting shorter, some of the old methods that were used to collect data have begun to seem rather cumbersome or even maybe a little intrusive. And so marketers have been noticing this as well, which is why the technology boom that we have had over the last few decades has been a godsend for many of them, although which God sent it, we may not really be sure about. And yet in this high-tech world that we live in, companies and pollsters are still able to get information from us and about us, whether we want to share that information with them or not. A good example of this is when we go to the grocery store. You go and you purchase your favorite brand of laundry detergent. You purchase it with your credit card, and then you take it home with you. And the next week, when you're at that grocery store again, checking out, you get a coupon that is automatically generated from a little machine that sits right there next to the register for the exact same brand of laundry detergent that you bought, as well as maybe several other items that might be in some way related to it. So it would seem that the grocery store knows what you like without you ever having to tell them what you like. And say that maybe you are on Facebook and you happen to respond to a particular political meme that a friend of yours has posted. So if you indicate that you like it, or you decide that maybe you want to share that same meme with your friends, below the post then will often appear a link to maybe another Facebook group or site that offers a similar type of understanding of whatever your political bend is. And so, is it any wonder that we have begun to believe that pollsters and that marketers know more about us than we might actually know about ourselves, that they know our likes and our dislikes, maybe even before we do? In this morning's gospel reading that we have here from Mark, when Jesus took his disciples to that region of Caesarea Philippi, he gave them a couple of poll questions. But in this case, it wasn't a survey that was meant to gather information about himself so much as it was an opportunity for him to define his brand of discipleship that he was looking for in them, and maybe by extension in us. Jesus knew his disciples better than they knew themselves. He knew their preferences for the kind of a Messiah that they were looking for, which is why he needed, I think, to refine and perhaps redefine his mission in the world with them. So here in this largely Gentile region, Jesus begins to turn now to his, begin to turn his disciples' attention away from their needs and their desires towards the way of the cross, which admittedly is a much tougher sell. And so as they were walking along, Jesus suddenly gives them the first survey question. What's the word on the streets about me? Who do people say that I am? Now, they had been traveling with Jesus throughout the villages of Judea and of Galilee, and along the way they had been collecting data. They had been hearing the buzz about Jesus, feeling the pulse of the crowd. And what they discovered was that the crowd had a wide variety of opinions about this healer and teacher from Galilee. One significant data point, however, seemed to dominate the survey. The crowd believed that Jesus was some sort of a prophet, perhaps in the mold of John the Baptist or Elijah or one of the other prophets who had dominated Israel's history in the past. This was a radical interpretation of the data, but it wasn't quite radical enough. To the crowd, Jesus was a kind of a throwback to an earlier age, perhaps like John the Baptist or like Elijah. He was in the mold of a forerunner to the real Messiah who was to come. However, their view of Jesus was rather myopic, as seen through that skewed lens of personal biases towards what a prophet or what a Messiah might actually look like. Anyone speaking with authority about God at that time could have easily been called a prophet. And yet it's not until Jesus directs his question very specifically now to his own disciples, but who do you say that I am, that the answers then become rather interesting. Jesus' own response is surprising, we might even say startling. Nevertheless, Peter volunteers his role as being now the spokesman for the group, and he offers an unexpected confession of faith here. You are the Messiah. Now, in Jesus' lifetime, that Hebrew term Messiah was interchangeable with the Greek word Christos, which both terms referred to as the Anointed One. Anointment validated the divine appointment of priests and prophets and kings back at that time. And you might also recall that in the era of the Second Temple, the Anointed One was seen as being a kind of a Davidic king who would restore then Israel and her people back to that past glory and greatness that they had had. This Anointed One was the one who would rain down a reign of divine justice for them. So Peter's confession here is really loaded with all sorts of triumphal overtures and overtones, weaving together worldly gains and divine empowerment. And so the first thing that Jesus does here is he responds to Peter's confession with this little cautionary statement. Don't tell anyone what Peter has just revealed to you. In other words, keep who I am a secret. And Jesus then proceeds to describe what the true nature of this messianic label means, which includes such things as suffering and rejection and even death at the hands of the religious authorities before rising after 3 days. Peter, however, is so appalled at this ludicrous teaching that he seems to almost want to take back his earlier claim of Jesus' messianic identity. And instead of treating God's chosen messenger here with deference and with respect, Jesus takes Jesus aside and he rebukes him. In other words, he treats Jesus as though he were some kind of a boneheaded dope. And by scolding Jesus, perhaps in private, Peter probably felt that he was doing Jesus this big favor here, saving him from some publicly embarrassing statements with an outlandish confession of the true nature of what his messianic identity was. Yet Jesus would have none of this. And so Jesus turns back to his disciples and he invites them to witness his own rebuke here and also his rebuttal to Peter's tongue lashing. And Jesus then likens Peter's rejection of this true nature of his messianic identity to something that Satan would say. We might ask the question, why was Jesus so strong here about this? Well, it's because Peter's confession is defined by the world's standards of success and power. And thus, what it does is it echoes Satan's perspective on wisdom and worth, influence and prestige. God's new work in the world is incomprehensible by humanly defined terms. And so in Jesus' rebuking of Peter here, Jesus is recognizing the temptation to be the kind of a Messiah that would attract strong polling numbers. The kind of a Messiah that Satan himself had at one point tried to tempt Jesus into becoming during those first 40 days that Jesus spent in the wilderness. But Jesus is moving, you see here, in a different direction, one in which few will want to go. And we as well have, as followers of Jesus, have to make the choice whether we will want to opt out of this as well. Jesus makes it clear here that this is not about comfort. It's about the cross. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. To get behind Jesus is to get ourselves under a cross and then walk on a road to rejection and suffering and self-denial. It's a life of doing what's right and what's hard rather than what is wrong and what is easy. Following Jesus is not trendy and it's not cool. And if it ever becomes that for any of us, well, then we've got the wrong Jesus. Following Jesus is always about living a life of sacrifice on behalf of others. Those are, you see, the divine things that Jesus wanted his disciples to focus on, not on the human things of popularity or prosperity or power. To follow Jesus, in other words, is to embrace a downward mobility in which one's own preferences are set aside in favor of Christ's preferences for us. Keep in mind here that when marketers and pollsters ask the questions that they want to know answers to, it is easy prey. They easily prey on the fact that we want things for ourselves and that we will always prefer people and things that match what's in our own best interest. Jesus, however, calls us to check here a different box. We save our lives by losing them. And the real profit only comes through giving our lives over to Jesus, living for his sake and for the sake of his kingdom. Jesus knew that this wouldn't be a popular way for many of us. and that the world would only see the cross as being this kind of a weird and gross marketing strategy. But those who are ashamed of Jesus and of his words and his ways will ultimately feel that real sting of shame in the end. By misinterpreting the data, they will ultimately find themselves out of business. Now, I think that it is easy for us 21st century disciples of Jesus to want to tailor our message and our methods to perhaps better fit the world's marketing trends. We like to be popular. We like to be trendy and have lots of people following us. We are tempted, just like Peter, to answer the question, "Who do you say that I am?" by making Jesus then into a Messiah who fits our profile. But Jesus won't have any of that. There is only one real answer, you see, to this question. Jesus is the Messiah, the Christ, and he calls us to follow him to the cross. And when we get to the cross, we are invited to climb up on it ourselves and to suffer and to die along with him. It's the way of self-denial. It's the way of self-sacrifice and self-giving. It's not about information. It's about imitation. So what's the buzz about Jesus? Who do you say that he is? If you can answer that question, then I think you will find that what you say truly does matter. Amen.